Welcome to Grina Bio1 Talks. My name is Helen Ivanoff. I'm Director of Global Market Management, and the topic that we will be discussing today is digitalization and pre-analytics. My guest today is Mr. Jafar Kiadi. He's head of the Department of Pathology and Laboratory Medicine at King Faisal Specialist Hospital and Research Center in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Thank you for joining us today, and I look forward to the discussion.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So let's start with AI. The digital world today has been integrated in many areas of healthcare. Do you believe that AI will continue to have a big impact in the transformation of healthcare?
Well, yeah, AI is really leading in many aspects in our life right now. And definitely healthcare is one of the most important aspects that we should consider. AI is all about replicating the human way of thinking in a more automated, efficient, controlled environment. So definitely by the time that we reach a better understanding of AI, I believe that it will have a big, big, big impact on healthcare.
And how about when we talk about healthcare and we focus a little bit more in the area of pre-analytics,
right?
How do you believe digitalization AI will impact that specifically, that specific area in healthcare?
See, the area of pre-analytics is a very important area, and it has so many dynamics that are impacting the end product, which is the result. We want to make sure that we have a controlled process so that we can have an accurate result that is delivered to the physician in a timely fashion. That's only the purpose of the laboratory. So now, looking at those areas where most of the human factor is there, and making sure that they become more controlled through some algorithms, some machine way of thinking, and having them, produce better results. I will give you an example. Identification could be the easiest way to be fixed by having a controlled process. And going through a digitalization, having a system to run the whole process is going to assure you that you will have no problem in misidentifying patient, which is one major problem that we have at our hospitals right now.
So that means that the connection of the patient during collection to the correct tube, labeling on the tube that's ultimately then processed in a laboratory would be part of this digitalization.
True. And not only the patient identification, mm-hmm. as healthcare professional, we need to know who collected the sample, mm-hmm. at what time it was collected, where was it collected, where is the location of the sample, and what happens afterwards? Aliquotient, separation, all those processes are mainly right now run by the staff.
Mm-hmm.
We can use machine learning to develop a better way to control these processes and have a better outcome.
So as pre-analytics are, the errors in pre-analytics are account for about 70% of errors. Do you believe, you did mention that this digital pre-analytical solution would impact that. So what would you be your estimation of the reduction of the percentage of errors? That you still have the human factor in many ways, but how could the digitalization reduce the errors, and what kind of percent? Do you believe it could be 20%, 50% or more?
Well, I think at this stage, it's a little bit too early to find out the percentage. But mm-hmm. let's just focus on what is important for us right now.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, AI will never take the role of the staff. Mm-hmm. It will not be 100% right by AI, because we still need the staff to do the thinking process, to do the interaction, the human interaction with the patient, with the healthcare professionals. So having those rules and algorithms designed in a way to control the process rather than take over from the human. Because I hear a lot of my colleagues, they really worry about AI taking over the whole process. And, we as professional medical technologists have spent a lot of years in training, and we know how important our role is to our patients. So sometimes people worry about the future and when AI is going to take over totally. Back to your question, I would think that there will be a tremendous reduction of those percentages, but let's see which rules are we applying.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that, you know, taking away the human factor, agreed, will never take place. It's more of a supplemental assistance to ensure a smoother flow in the, for example, the collection process, or smoother flow in the laboratory as well. So, so you mentioned patient ID. So patient ID and sampling are still major challenges in laboratories and hospital. What about in your laboratory and hospital?
Well, in general, many hospital settings lack an automated system, or a system that would either identify the patient in the correct way. The best way to identify the patient is to ask the patient their full details and then write them down on a piece of paper, and then stick that paper on the tube, and then put the collection time. And all of this is manual process. And you know, when there is a manual process, there is a big chance that something can go wrong. Either the wrong name, wrong date, wrong label, anything can go wrong. Besides, we have noticed that some practice, due to some healthcare professionals not fully aware of the impact of, like, for example, batching those labels, or having so many labels printed at once and going to the patient rooms and collecting the samples, that can lead to misidentification sometimes. And the outcome is really not for the it's not good for the sake of patients. So, with proper training, you can reach to a certain level of competency, but you still need to understand the dynamics that you have new staff boarding, you have staff that are really rushing things out, staff that have so many different responsibilities. So mistakes can happen anywhere between the identification of the patient until you collect the sample. And even beyond that, at the time you deliver it to the lab, if there is a delay, sometimes it will impact the chemical composition of the sample. And it becomes, and you cannot test the sample because of that delay. So many things that are a good potential for improvement by employing a good AI system to help. In taking out the variabilities in the process. Yes.
And are there any guidelines that your facility follows, or in general in Saudi Arabia, regarding when a tube should be labeled? Because, you know, we see a lot of discussion over here. Some facilities perhaps use the night shift to pre-label because there's time, and other facilities require that after the sample is collected, then it's labeled. Some label right before the sample is collected. So I'd be interested to hear how your guidelines are, how you train your people.
So in Saudi Arabia, we are proud that we have a national accreditation program that is mandated for every healthcare setting, hospitals, clinics, and so on. It is called the Central Board of Accrediting Healthcare Institution, CBAHI. Mm-hmm. So they have a set of standards that governs the whole healthcare process, and part of it is the laboratory. And part of the laboratory, big part of it, is addressing how and when and why are samples collected, how is the traceability, what method do we use for tracing the specimen all across the lab, the labeling process itself. But it tells you exactly what are the requirements to be presented on the label. It doesn't go as far as telling you when to put that label, but it depends on the hospital, the healthcare setting, what kind of environment they have, and what policies, local policies, do they have.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to jump into you're familiar with pre-barcoded tubes?
Could be something that I've heard about, but okay. I'm not very familiar about it.
So pre-barcoded tubes, so Griner offers pre-barcoded tubes relieve a number of issues, such as, you know, maybe placing the barcode incorrectly on a tube, so, you know, perhaps causing some instrumentation reading issues, or, you know, it's wrinkled or it's crooked or maybe smeared and so forth. So Griner offers pre-barcoded tubes. However, these tubes just have a barcode on it. There's no name. There's no department. There's no additional information specifically related to the patient on the label itself. That is where you would link it in with a digital system. How do you think the perception or the acceptance would be to have a label on a tube without a patient's name on it?
Well, if it serves the purpose, I mean, I would really have to examine the process clearly to see how mm-hmm. it relies to our standards. But I mean, mm-hmm. to just give you the layman's point of view, if at least you can have a control process to connect the dots, have mm-hmm. a complete circle without any issue of traceability, reaching from the patient to the sample, to the ordering physician, to the test. If you can do that, whether it's on the label or whether it's stored somewhere electronically, mm-hmm. then I guess it serves the purpose.
Yes, it would be linked digitally.
Okay.
So scan the label and then you can see everything about the patient. But digitally, it's no longer. Okay. So do you currently track your samples? And if you do, how do you track them?
Okay. So in general, in many hospitals that I have seen, the process goes as follows. You print the label. You go to the patient bedside, you collect the sample, and then write down the identification of the phlebotomist, the person mm-hmm. who collected the sample, and the time of the collection, mm-hmm. and stick it on the tube. So this is how you connect the phlebotomist to the patient, to the specimen itself, by manually writing down.
On the tube label.
On the tube label.
Okay.
That's one way of doing it.
Okay.
Now, I've seen other examples on bedside label printing mm-hmm. in which the phlebotomist will have a portable printer mm-hmm. and they have a barcode scanner and they go to next to the patient for example, an inpatient. Mm-hmm. They scan their bracelet and they scan their ID for the phlebotomist and then they print the label immediately so it will have all the information spontaneously attached to the tube and move on. Mm-hmm. This is a better way of doing it rather than having it manually written on the tube. And this way, you also can assure that further processes such as receiving the sample in lab, it can go simultaneously. The time stamp of the time the sample was received in the lab, then it will go into the machine and instrumentation. So there is no need to write anything on the system. There are even some rare hospitals that still use paper forms. Mm-hmm. Like old, they don't have a computer system, mm-hmm. but that is not the case. Like in most of the hospitals that I have seen.
Okay, and thinking about pre-barcoded tubes, like I briefly defined.
Okay.
Where do you believe that could have the largest impact in pre-analytics?
Can you,
for example,
okay.
Like I mentioned, so if a barcode is already, if you buy a tube that's got a barcode on it, you don't have to print them anymore. So yeah. Perhaps maybe some costs or time to print it out and place it. Those would be examples of impacts or, you know, obviously patient ID issues would also be a potential impact. Are there any other areas you might think that could
Of course.
Be impacted.
I mean, if you want to be as efficient as possible, now sometimes you have a label printer failure,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes mm-hmm. the ink is not very clear on the mm-hmm. label. Sometimes it's misplaced on the tube so that it won't be readable by them by mm-hmm. the lab automation. Mm-hmm. So those are so many areas in mm-hmm. which, unfortunately, we would have to either discard the sample because we don't want to relabel a specimen. Because there is a chance that this could lead to misidentification.
Okay.
So you would have the hassle of going again to the patient and recollecting another sample. And that's a big risk.
Okay, right.
And that's a risk in the process itself. So this is, you know, these are some of the problems, so logistical problems per se, mm-hmm. that cost the organizations a lot of money and a lot of work to correct them.
Mm-hmm.
So a pre-printed label would definitely be in a standardized format, aligned properly on the mm-hmm. tube, has the identification number that goes on, and it seems like a solution that could really work and help facilities overcome those challenges.
Yes, and so when we talk about the pre-analytical phase, and we talk about, you know, the collector has a lot of things to do, right? There's labeling, there's checking the identification of the patient, there's the collection process, there's the training of inversions. How many times do you invert the tube to make sure the additive is mixed well with the sample and so forth? So do you have training? How do you train your phlebotomists and your laboratory personnel for proper best practices? And how often do you do that?
So for training staff, I mean, we have definitely to train them upon boarding. You would show them what are the requirements. You would have them read the policies and procedure and then give a demonstration on how to perform the collection and all those, you know, remaining steps. Then after that, you would, have them checked against a criteria checklist for competency assessment, mm-hmm. have them being observed, ask questions, have them answer a written exam, any of those six tools for competency assessment. You do that twice the first year and then annually after that. Or if you introduce any new change to your process. Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about the dynamics in that, I mean, you really need to understand that if we're talking about the nursing task force, mm-hmm. There is a high turnover in nursing. And, mm-hmm. And in the right now, the healthcare setup is very complicated to the extent that so many responsibilities are being handled by a single nurse, for example, and there is a shortage of staff. So many complications in the process that might lead to mistakes happening. So you have to be very careful on how to design your training program, when to deliver the training, what elements you should make sure to cover, and most importantly is to support all those guidelines with scientific background to make it comprehended by the staff being trained. We know that it's not an easy job, despite many people think it's just a sample collection, mm-hmm. but all subsequent processes in the lab depend on that step, which is sample collection.
Exactly. And do you also, when you train, do you provide e-learning, or is e-learning one of the options to be used in training, for example?
We do e-learning. We have a certain training materials, mm-hmm. and questions and answers, and they have to answer them, and they go through an examination. Mm-hmm. And they would have to answer them, and they have mm-hmm. to pass the score so that they can be deemed competent to proceed and do the process of phlebotomy.
Okay, so I know you mentioned phlebotomists and nurses. Are mainly the phlebotomists that collect the blood, or is it a phlebotomist or in the outpatient area, or how does that work in your
There's system? So many ways to do that, okay. and depending on the internal policy within the hospital, mm-hmm. And depending on the number of staff, so many things that control mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. But at mm-hmm. the end of the day, some responsible, trained person mm-hmm. will have to collect the sample from that patient, mm-hmm. and that person have to be deemed competent by the program director who is writing down the policy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a nurse, mm-hmm. whether it's a technician, mm-hmm. whether it's a technologist, mm-hmm. they have to be fully aware of how they do the process and what are the consequences of making mistakes, especially in patient identification.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's move to another area, transport.
Okay.
Do you monitor or do you track samples and transport? And if so, how do you? And if you not, how would you?
Okay, so that's another area of concern, mm-hmm. because in some cases, the sample is collected in a correct manner and identified very well. And it has, a sufficient amount of, specimen in it. So mm-hmm. it's ready mm-hmm. to be tested. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't get tested because of it gets lost in transportation. And sometimes they just, it gets left somewhere, delayed in transportation because of people being so busy, especially from ER, mm-hmm. an emergency room. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really so busy and so many things to be done. So this gets a second or sometimes third priority to deliver the sample to the lab. So the right way to track it is through Having an automated process, a systematic approach, a system that controls the timestamps from the time of the order of the physician until the end product is delivered, which is the report or the lab result. So there is the time the order physician puts the order in the system, the time that the sample was collected, the time that it was received in lab, and then finally the time it was boarded on the machine and resulted. So between the sample being collected and delivered to the lab, there goes a big variability that, it might get lost and it might, not reach the final destination in the right time.
What about like temperature monitoring during that time? Because I'm just saying, for example, the driver goes to have a coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Or needs to use the restroom.
Drivers love coffee, by the way. They do love coffee.
So he goes to have a coffee, I don't know, the samples are sitting and they're getting above the temperature they should be at.
True.
That would be something then, would that be something of importance and interest to have included, assuming there was a solution that provided that?
See, pretty much it's very important to understand that all those environmental changes, especially in our country where the weather condition can be sometimes reached to extreme heat, you have to make sure that upon delivering a sample, it goes into acceptable temperature conditions. And how do you know that without having a continuous monitoring of the temperature? You have to know that it's not only upon the time that we collect the sample and receive it. There is this long journey that we need to track. It might have been left under the sun for a while. It might have been damaged. So you need to really keep that in mind and how you control the temperature throughout the whole journey of the specimen.
Would real-time GPS be interesting?
Oh, ultimately, yes. I mean, it was a dream like a couple of years back to have like GPS track like important shipment, like if you are ordering something online and something really precious. So right now, it's just like most of the big companies are really investing a lot. So I think even the cost is reduced for monitoring those shipments. And I think if something has to, if you need to, there is no more valuable shipment than a human sample that is going to decide the outcome of the patient health.
Yeah.
So that investment is really something worth looking into, and tracking it is really going to add value. Yeah.
So as an all-encompassing solution that had GPS, real-time GPS tracking, temperature monitoring, perhaps even shock or vibration impact and so forth on a sample, that would really, in your opinion, create a lot of value for the laboratory. Yeah, I'm thinking, for example, even planning your accessioning that, that there's a big delivery of samples coming in at 1 o'clock, that you can plan your people appropriately in the laboratory to handle the, receiving of the samples and so forth. So I would assume that would be also something. Yeah. So I'm going to shift to another area. You mentioned before the human factor.
Right.
So staff shortages. This is an issue all around the world, particularly in the nursing area. And recently, there has been a lot of talk about automation and automated blood collection. Certainly in Europe, just recently, a Dutch company has come out with an automated blood collection machine. What are your thoughts about that, having a machine collect your blood and not a person?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, to be honest, I'm pro technology, and I'm always in full support of the advancement of any field, not only the healthcare field, through technology and through controlled rules and through automation. When it comes to collecting a sample, I think I'm still old school. So I would assume that you really need the human touch there. You need to have the passion, compassion, the dialogue. It could ease a lot of that We know specimen collection is not, it's not an easy thing. You're pricking the patient. It's painful sometimes, and you have to go in several times to reach the vein. So you need really the human factor there to make the situation less painful to the patient. Whereas what could happen later on, I don't know. I cannot predict the future, but I see that there is a potential that some companies might really prove that they have a robotics phlebotomy, if that's what you are talking about.
Yeah, so it's like a machine that has either a near-infrared scanner to identify the vein or ultrasound.
Okay.
Has an automated tourniquet. And the thinking behind that is maybe more of a standardized blood collection, standardized phlebotomy, because you don't have the human factor. And everybody, no matter how well they're trained, are still going to have a specific way they hold a device or, how they prefer the arm to be set. And every patient is different as well. So the idea here is that you always have exactly the same method each time. And the other side is that technically the machine could work 24/7. So you have an efficiency, you have an output. So there are multiple aspects in the procedure itself. Now, the idea is that there's a person, there's always an operator available. But that operator wouldn't then be doing the work of a nurse or a phlebotomist of, the patient contact, easing, the patient, making them feel comfortable, reacting right away if they're nervous or, the venipuncture doesn't work. So that's the idea behind it. And, there's different camps. Some say, yeah, some say, oh, I want, So, yeah, I'm just...
Well, resistance to change and resistance to advancement of technology is something that it's not that uncommon.
Mm.
So many things that we have resisted in the past, they are part of our daily routine right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure if this system was subjected to enough trials and approvals, it's proven that there is no safety, outcome on patient health. Definitely, and there is an operator behind the scene, so there is a good control of the process. I'm sure. Maybe we're just, because it's new, we really need to understand it further and see how it works.
Mm-hmm. Well, in closing, maybe I'd like to ask you to describe a pre-analytical experience that you've had that stays in your memory. It could be professionally, it could be personally, privately. Do you have something that you...
Well, part of my role is, to oversee the pre-analytical area of my lab. So, different stories every day, but... I cannot really think of a scenario in which that gets into my mind rather than, the staff themselves. See, the more investment you put into your staff when it comes to training, having them understand, and most particular, the science behind any step, you just don't put a checklist and expect them to go by the rules. Mm-hmm. They have to really be part of your process. They have to understand the ins and outs so that they can really deliver well. We have tried that in so many different areas and it worked perfect. So you apply a rule without explaining why that rule is, and chaos goes in. But when you really train them and show them the science behind it, they will be really very understanding, and they will follow the rule for the sake of patient safety. So I would like to take this chance to salute the team. And I have a very active team of young girls and boys. They are active and they're always helping, our patients to complete their journey in a safe, efficient, and effective manner.
Well, thank you very much for your time and the very enlightening and interesting discussion.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.